Welcome. I'm your host, Andrea Maximo, and you are listening to the Electric Feminine Podcast.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the Electric Feminine. Today, I'm not going to say my famous catchphrase, which is I'm so excited because I'm excited every single episode. But today, I'm beyond excited. Today, I'm honored. Today, I am fucking hyped as hell because I have someone with us today. Her name is Liana Silver. She is the author of the book, and I have it right here, so I'll get it all down. Feminine Genius, The Provocative Path to Waking Up and Turning on the Wisdom of Being a Woman. I read this book last year, and I have to admit that when I first got it, it was on a Kindle, and I kind of sat on the Kindle, and I had read a chapter, and I was like, I like where this is going. And then true to form, because it takes me 18 months to 2 years to read one book sometimes because life, I finally completed it. And I literally am like, every woman in the universe needs this book. So who is Liana Silver? She's a coach. She's a teacher. She's a speaker, an author. She helps entrepreneurial minded women find the full expression of their feminine strength. I love this so much. Inside and out of the office, Liana has been leading women for 13 plus years. Whether it's in her private practice, her mentorship program, her online courses, Liana is here to light that spark in your soul you may think has gone out. She's going to lead you right back to it. Welcome so much. I am so excited you're here.
I am so excited. Thank you.
Yes. You know, I'm telling you, that book, I had to refrain from wanting to like just do a running quote for you and be like, okay, about this quote and about this quote, because I was just highlighting mm-hmm. highlighting and wanting to go back and then share with people and wanting to read and be like, you guys, you have to hear this, because you just articulated so beautifully, I think, what, you know, I teach with women and sensual embodiment, but what, you know, what we're all experiencing, but we don't have answers to or understand, or we think is wrong with us. And you touched on everything. Just when I think, I was like, she's touched on everything. Like, no, there's more. And I'm going to also let you know that this is okay. And this is okay. And this is okay about you. So really affirming, validating. Thank you so much for writing it. What was the spark for writing that book?
I am deeply moved by the underdog. Mm-hmm. And the underdog feelings in all of us, the underdog of girls and women and the way that we have been oppressed and marginalized. I think that's the oldest game in the book. Mm-hmm. It gets worse, you know, gets worse. But there is something so precious about being able to look where no one else is looking and say, this needs to be seen. And I just have a thing for girls and women and for some more sovereignty and freedom in that arena. Yeah. And here's the thing. This is going to get a little out there too quick, but that the root cause, like there's like two root causes for much of the suffering in the human race. Mm-hmm. The first is that we're disconnected from what we would call feminine energy. We all have mm-hmm. it inside our beings, our bodies, regardless of wherever we are in the spectrum of gender. But we have lost that. We denigrate it. We do not connect it. That is why the planet is suffering. That is why we individually suffer. We can go into what the feminine energy is in a moment, but it's not a simple answer, but it would change things tremendously if we had access to our feminine energy the way we have access to our masculine energy. And so it sparked in me, right? Like it chose me, and it feels really important to get out there. And I'm so glad it's readable and it's relatable. You know, I'm so glad it got through and it's doing its job.
And that piece though is readable and relatable, because I mean, your concepts are like, yes, you know, they're out here sometimes. And you're kind of like, yeah, okay. Especially if you're really new to the work, right? But at the same time, you also make it very like, it's common fucking sense. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I can also see where this is why things are the way they are. And here's why it might get better. I do want to touch on the feminine masculine energy thing, because I was hosting a room on that app, Clubhouse. Okay. And we were talking about feminine energy. And there were some people in the room that were getting uncomfortable or upset because they were equating it so specifically to gender. Yeah. And these were people who were very much, you know, not on the gender train, and they wanted to be, you know, without that, understandably. And, you know, for the first time, I found myself going, okay, how do I break this down? Because I understand the concepts, but I also see where people are going to be very literal about it.
Yeah.
Can you give us an idea better what it means?
Yeah, great. And honestly, I got to say, the book came out 2017, that's 4 years ago. In that time period, I thought I should not have used the word feminine because of this very issue, because it doesn't necessarily have to do with gender, although I do tend to work with people who identify as women and people who identify as cisgendered women and who feel like they're access to what they would call feminine has been really, really hindered. So I will say that, but okay. So let's say you have, okay. So this is an awesome story. This is a story from an indigenous tribe of the Amazon. Don't know the tribe's name. There's a story that says that one of the problems with humanity is that humanity is a bird. Like a metaphor is humanity is a bird with two wings, right? It has one wing that is masculine, one wing that is feminine, and it needs both wings to fly. And right now we have cut off one of its wings and said like, that wing less useful than the other. And so the bird is flapping around and like barely get off the ground and suffering a lot. So it's one aspect of our capabilities we would call them capabilities or abilities. If I take me a second to get this slide up, but let's just talk about this for a second. In traditional Chinese medicine or in certain Asian traditions, you might remember yin and yang, right? There's this really cool symbol. There's this kind of like a half, the circle is sort of cut in half in a curvy way, black, white, a little bit of white in the black, right? What that represents is yin and yang. It's these two different energies of the universe that seem to manifest everywhere, and they're just different qualities. So here's why it's important. We as a culture value logic. It's a yang quality. That's a masculine quality. And we devalue intuition, which could be a yin quality or a feminine quality. And this fucks us up just like, right? So we got masculine all the way. We've got logic. We've got competition. We've got thinking. We've got goal orientation. And that we don't have intuition. We don't have pleasure and sensuality. We don't have emotion. We don't have collaboration and connection. And we are suffering. So that's it. That's what feminine energy is. It is our intuition. It is our bodies, our pleasure, our sensuality. It is our ability to connect deeply rather than compete, to feel rather than think. To intuit rather than logic. And not everybody's lost access to that, but when was the last time you cried and didn't apologize for crying? When have you not felt like, why am I off my game? I'm a little off my game. I'm supposed to be on my game all the time. Like, no, a little off your game, bad thing, right? We don't have respect for things that go up and down. We want it to be in one straight linear line. I call this masculine genius, and too much of it hurts us.
So someone described it to me shortly after that. And I thought this was kind of cool, and it helped me, I think, articulate it better to those who were having trouble with it. Feminine was inner energy, masculine was outer energy. And I thought that was really cool too.
Nice.
Because if I think of the masculine energies we're doing, which is a lot of doing and taking care of things and checking things off. And it's a very outward thing. Mm. Whereas the feminine is more, it's asking us to go in. It's asking us to listen to the body. It's asking us to listen to the oracle that you're introducing us to in the book, right? Yeah. That kind of, I was like, huh, okay. Okay. Because I do, and I understand and I respect so deeply the matter of gender and how this is freeing so many people up in so many ways. And I would love for all of us to also know that we don't have to be quite so literal about things, and that it's okay. You know, like, you're not implying that you can't have this if you don't identify with either one of those genders.
Truly.
It's an energy that we're talking about. That's what it is. And you're going to have that energy regardless of how you identify.
Absolutely. Yes. Okay. Yes. I love that. I'm on board. Yeah.
So now I'm curious, because when I initially looked up Feminine Genius, because I saw the title of the book, I'm like, what a badass name. I was like, oh, that's what it is that we're messing with. Yes, that's what we're sparking. That's what we're lighting up when we're dancing. But then I looked it up and the Pope shows up everywhere.
No,
and I'm like, wait a minute.
So I might be getting a little too high with myself here, too little bit like feeling myself here. But all right, so I've had a Google alert on Feminine Genius since I wrote the book proposal. Actually, it was on my website. I think this has been like 10 years ago. I had a Google alert on Feminine Genius. Zip. Nothing on Feminine Genius until I started writing the book and articles, et cetera. And then all of a sudden there's all these articles from Catholic Times and from the Pope on the Feminine Genius. And I was like, how could you? I think I inspired the fucking Pope. Okay. I don't know, but you couldn't have two different readings of the work Feminine Genius. I'm with you.
Different. And I was like, I'm willing to look, because I'm always very open. I don't want to shut it down just because, you know, of my personal feelings with how certain things. And again, somebody actually had me really kind of clarify, like, do you have a issue specifically with religion or how it's been interpreted and used? And I was like, that's a great point. And it's a really good distinction. But I have an issue, you know, in general, I'm just like, where are we going with this? So I'm reading it. And there were some things that I was like, okay. And then it started veering off into just the place of like tradition and the shoulds, and this is the expectation. And then I got kind of like, okay, and we lost me here. I'm like, this is not where she got that inspiration. I know this is two different thought patterns right here. Good. I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you very much.
I'm with you. And
Pope out here just snatching,
you know, be like, oh, she's on to something. But you know, how can I, you know, bring that back to keep my sheep in line here, keep the fold in here.
Oh my goodness, I'm dying right now.
Yeah. Nope, not where I was going with it.
Okay, good. Got it. So another part of the book that really kind of slapped me up in my face is there's a section where you just start running off statistics of the state, our mental state as women, you know, the amount of assaults we endure. The numbers were like staggering. Just to give people an idea, 1 in 4 women take antidepressants. 65% of women have an eating disorder. 97% of women admit to having at least one "I hate my body" moment each day. 1 in 3 women will experience sexual or physical abuse. I was just like, what the fuck is going on? Like, why does the world have to be or seem to be such a dangerous place to be a woman? Like, on so many levels, yeah, a woman is 70% more likely than a man to experience depression during her lifetime. I'm like, what is going on? Why?
Yeah. So we're talking about health. We're talking about body sovereignty. We're talking about sexuality or sexual abuse. We are talking about mental health here. So right, this is a lot. I wonder, like, where did this happen? Why did this happen? So let me just, let me talk a little bit about, this is going to be tricky. So I want to talk a little bit about the female body. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, sex characteristics are not black and white, right? Mm-hmm. And yet, there are certain hormonal cocktails that happen in the brain in utero and at certain points at 3 years old, and then at puberty again, that will define certain ways that the body is going to present certain secondary sex characteristics. Mm-hmm. Now, right. So I just want to say, like, this isn't a should, but this is an exploration of the difference between a, we just call a female body and a male mm-hmm. body. Mm-hmm. So built into the system of a female body that has a certain hormonal cocktail, both bodies have got hormones. In a female body, hormones are working in concert to fluctuate. They're meant to go up and down to support the reproductive system. Now, mm-hmm. if we just take that fact alone and we look at a culture, so we have this culture that says, don't go up and down. Take some Adderall for that. Don't go up and down. Be steady. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're having a little pain around your period. Go on the pill when you're 12. Mm-hmm. And then maybe you'll think about coming off when you're 40 and you want to conceive. Or to this day, medical scientific studies, research is done on male subjects, not female subjects, because it is said that the menstrual cycle skews the results. That means all the medications and most of the medications and the results of science are done on the male body, if they're animals, or like essentially for a 160-pound white man. And that means when you're getting that white pill, you're getting that advice, he's not taking into account your body as a female body, or however much, you know, of female hormones you have. So to have a female body in this mm-hmm. in this masculine dominated world is to be considered problematic. Oh, the way that your body is designed is problematic for my research. Mm-hmm. And so this is one example of what is going on. I think that this thinking that one type of body, one type of mind, one type of way of being is superior to another, that male bodies are superior to female mm-hmm. bodies, then gets us in this way of thinking, like any of that hierarchical thinking that starts mm-hmm. oppression, right? Gets us into loads mm-hmm. of trouble that we're trying to unravel at the moment. But that way mm-hmm. of thinking says, oh, the body of that young woman is worth less than mine. Mm-hmm. And her sexuality is owed to me, or I could, mm-hmm. I can, you know, I own it. That's all right. It's mm-hmm. all right for me to, mm-hmm. you know, take what I want when I want it. Mm-hmm. So it is the perspective, I think, mm-hmm. That one type of body is more valid than another. And then the ways that seeps into our culture and then makes it down into these statistics. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wonder too, like, you know, has this been always, or is it that the modern woman, as you know, she's waking up to another perspective and possibly understanding, oh, so much of it has been omitted, yeah. or so much of it has been skewed, that as she's coming to the realization of really what is the truth, but she's still stuck in, you know what I'm saying? Like part of what's interesting to me is that I teach these women in the room to embody their sensuality, their sexuality, their dancing. It's amazing. It's gorgeous. They're so free. They're unapologetic. They leave and all that goes. It actually stays in the room with me. And then they go to return to who they were outside.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm seeing that as they're not trusting that they found the truth, but they can't fully live it outside yet because the world hasn't accepted that yet. Yeah. Right. So I'm thinking, God, what a strain that must be, that, you know, for some people, as we're trying to evolve, that you're afraid to, you can't fully get there, or you see it, you don't even dare try. You don't even know how to get there, but you know, there's something that's not. What they're selling me is not the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. Now there's a valid process when we're sorting out a new way of being, or, you know, kind of a new way of life, which is not this, this isn't working, not this, not this, not this, not this, before we get to this. So let's just take that woman who has come into your class and has felt comfortable in her own body for maybe the first time in her life. And she's in there and she owns it and she loves it. And it's like the size, the weight, it's like, that is not what is present. She is in celebration of the skin that she is in, right? She walks out that door and knows that on the way home, she could be physically or sexually assaulted, and she might be blamed for it based on, did she take the right route home? What was she wearing? Right. So I get it. Right. It takes a, I mean, I'm glad that she can come back to your community, because it takes a community of other people that are living and thinking like you to help you stabilize these new way of being, new ways of being. And because most of us, we walk out, we close the book, or we walk out of the workshop, or we walk out of your dance class, and the world still says, how I perceive you is more important than you feel in yourself. And you could be physically overpowered on your walk home, and that is just the way it is. And be sexy, because that's really the thing we're gauging your worth on, but don't be too sexy, because then really bad things could happen.
Right.
And so, like, you got to put on your coat and go out into mind fuckery.
Yeah. You know, I remember I had posted something about, it was like a shaming incident at school that a student had been sent home, young girl, over something she was wearing. And, you know, the implication being, though, that it's because she was going to incite something with the boys. And instead of, you know, speaking to the boys about their reaction, their natural reaction, and nothing to shame them about, but to explain to them what's happening and how to actually navigate it and what is the proper way to do it, they blame her and they send her home and they punish her for just wearing what she felt comfortable in. Okay. Now, and I'm not talking about, I understand that there are some things that I do feel, you know, with 13, 12 year olds, there are age appropriate clothing. And I know that there are some younger girls that are really pushing the boundaries, but I'm just talking about, this was like a basic outfit this kid had on. I'm sorry. And I've been sent home from Episcopalian school because I had on leggings. This was in the 80s when the leggings were in. The nuns told me it was way too revealing. My mother gave him an earful. she's like, the fuck. It was great. But anyway, it was one of those things where this mom reached out to me and she's like, I take your class. I've been to your class. I am such a stand for what you were saying. And it terrifies me to have my daughter out there and wanting her to be so comfortable in her body and wanting her to not feel like she has to cover herself up from head to toe. But at the same time, I don't know how to protect her because I can't control these gross ass men out there, really way too old to be looking at this child. I can't control all that. And my heart went out to her because I understand that dilemma. What is the right thing to do? What do you say to a mom like that?
Yeah.
What would you say?
Well, I think there's to the mom and I think there's to the school, the classroom, right? So God, I just read this amazing article. There's a woman in the UK who just was sort of found, her remains were found, and it seems like it was, And and the article was really saying, like, you know, she did all the right things. She told everybody, she wore bright colors. She went a well-lit route home. She told somebody she was leaving and was going to be home at a certain time, check in. And so it was an article and an inquiry about, why aren't women safe walking home? And there was someone in parliament said, I suggest that all men have a curfew of 6 p.m.
Hello.
And I was like, well, I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, but I was like, the suggestion, which is the same as maybe we should talk to the boys. Yeah. Maybe the boys should understand what happens. They're having a response, and that actually they can start to understand what it's like mm-hmm. to have those feelings in their body, what you act on, what you say, what you don't.
Yeah.
And how that translates, right, to later in life. For the mother, I mean, I think in a way it's like we do our best. Mm-hmm. I think a little bit of both. I think when it's age appropriate, we bring our daughters to class and mm-hmm. we teach them how to feel comfortable and dress mm-hmm. the way that they want to dress and mm-hmm. teach them about the world that they still live in, even while we're mm-hmm. creating a world for them to live in.
That sucks.
It sucks.
I'm sorry. I'm just so mad that we have to do this. You know, it makes me as mad as me having to have a conversation with my sons who are brown, even though they're half Asian, they present as possibly Latino or possibly a mixed Black, but they're not white, that they have to behave a certain way, possibly if they get pulled over. Even though I don't teach them to be afraid of the police, there is a procedure that I say, you know, like I had one father, Halloween, bless his heart, he's a wonderful man. He's white though. And he was like, hey, the boys want to do this costume. I'm going to get them shotguns. They look really realistic. And I'm like, are you crazy? You can't put that in my child's hands. Your kid maybe could get away with it. And even then I'm like, dude, do not do that to your kid. But mine, definitely, like, that's just a target on him. You cannot. And he was like, oh my God, I didn't even think about that. The fact that we have to teach our children, like, be free and...
Yeah.
It's that and that just infuriates me. It
infuriates me. I remember when I heard about that talk that mm-hmm. you got to have with your kids mm-hmm. who have other than white skin at like mm-hmm. 5 years old or whenever it is. Mm-hmm. It's like, it breaks my heart. It's a wild, wild time. You know, and mm-hmm. it depends. There's right, like, especially for mothers and daughters, there is this natural individuation process that happens where a daughter's like, mm-hmm. I'm not listening to anything you say.
Right.
if I could like design the perfect kumbaya mother-daughter relationship, yeah. she would be empowered to dress herself and, you know,
right,
you know, express herself and also advocate for herself when she gets home from school, like, well, why aren't the boys getting sent home from school so I can wear my outfit and continue to learn and they can right. go figure out, you know, what they need to do differently next time. Hello.
Right.
But it sucks. It sucks. And,
yeah.
You know, I've had some clients every once in a while are like, is this feminine genius stuff, like, is it working? Like, could I work in a way that doesn't burn me out? Like, mm-hmm. can we really, you know, have a next generation that's more free mm-hmm. or something? And I'll tell you my more optimism leaning and more pessimism leaning mm-hmm. Version. I think it is changing. I think it is slower mm-hmm. than anybody wants. And there is a lot of two steps forward, one step back, a lot of one step mm-hmm. forward, two steps back. But I do think mm-hmm. we're inching toward a more safe and just reality for girls and yeah. for women. I do. I think it's heading there much slower than I would like. And at the end of the day, when I'm feeling a little more pessimistic, it's like, but it feels true to me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So where am I going to put my energy? Mm-hmm. Am I going to, though, this is what is true for me and feels right. And these are the people mm-hmm. I'm going to support. And right. It's like that line from the Shawshank Redemption, mm-hmm. Which is a beautiful movie. And I think it's Morgan Freeman's character. He says yeah. something like, you get busy living or you get busy dying.
You get busy dying. Yeah, it's a great line.
A great line. And I'm kind of like, yeah. you get busy feminine geniusing or you get busy dying.
Right.
You know, like,
right.
choose where, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to switch gears really quick here because I'm so curious too about your work. How are you working with women in business when it comes to this? Because I find this is something new to me as well. And something I've realized is that I have been working very much in my masculine energy, which is by when's deadlines, you know, my goals, I check them off, you know, I allow things to move. I hold goals lightly, but even within that, there's still like, go, 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 go. If I'm resting, I'm not producing. Right. And it was just finally this year that I am allowing myself to flow more and trusting that and not feeling so pressed that if I don't actually shoot out 3 videos tomorrow, that I'm going to suddenly lose it all. You know, everything I'm building towards it. If I'm not cranking out content, then I'm not going to have, you know, something to give clients, like just really trusting that. And it's actually for the first time, I don't want to say it's a fluke, but it's working. So what do you do? How do you help women with this? I kind of stumbled. Well, actually, it was your book. It started with your book. And then me kind of looking online and finding other people who were actually teaching this. And I'm going, okay, this is interesting concept. Tell me, how do you arrive at this? What are you teaching them?
Okay. So there's 2 ways to look at this. One is, you know, when you're in work mode, you're using outward energy, right? Using goal orientation and using your logic and you're using your competitive, like go, go, go on all the time. Like, fine, great. It's wonderful. It's a genius energy. Go for it. Can you transition at some other point and rejuvenate? Can you actually look inward? Can you hear the voice of your own inner knowing? Because it is there. It's just usually quieter than your loud, overbearing mind. So sometimes it's a question of a transition between modes. And sometimes it's a question of weaving outward energy and inward energy into the day or into the way that you work. Both are fine. Like, it just depends on the woman or the person. Here's the concept. Let me just say 2 concepts. I have a course on this called Feminine Genius at Work, and it's based on a couple of different ideas. And the first one is pleasure before productivity. And most of us, like you just said in your example, are like, got to be productive. And maybe if I feel like I earned enough productivity stars, I can go have a treat.
Then I get a bath.
Get a bath, right? And it's not even that you would take a bath before you write your emails or shoot your video. It's not even that it comes in a sequence before anything else, but that the priority is that the deep enjoyment of my body or the yes of my body gets more of my attention than productivity. It's higher on the list of important things for me, of feeding my soul, of attending to my body, of doing the baths, the dance classes, the meditation, the walk in nature, the cooking, whatever it is, that's a higher non-negotiable than the productivity. And that requires a reorganization and an absolute swimming against the stream. Mm-hmm. Because wow, do we live in a world that rewards productivity? It is so scary to think about not being productive. So, you know, we just start talking about that idea and how it could fit into the workday. Okay. And sometimes it's like, go, go, go all day. That's fine. But shut it off an hour earlier. Mm-hmm. You know? And then what is it going to take for you to get out of your head and be present for your family? Or what is it going to say? No, I won't take that extra thing on because that evening I get to go to Anjua's class and I need to feed my soul that way. Here's the other one. No, so that's none of that's easy. None of that's easy. It's like a protest in and of itself, right? So I'm not saying it's easy. The other thing that I love is helping people to connect with their intuition or inner knowing before logic.
That part.
That one. Okay. All right. So I'll just tell you, right? So here I am. I'm in the middle of a webinar workshop I love the course. I'm excited to do the course. And like, I get this like, no, from my inner voice, just like, no, this is not going to work. Stop. You're going to die if you keep going in this direction. And I'm like, I finished the workshop and then let me get back to you voice. So here I'm getting this intuitive message And I spent a lot of time able to hear that voice. We can talk about that in a minute, right?
For sure.
Which makes no logical sense. I am on a launch. I have promised X, Y, and Z. This makes all the sense in the world. The numbers line up on the page and equal a certain number in my bank account. This makes no logical sense. But the intuitive sense in our inner energy, our inner knowing is in touch with a kind of intelligence that logic cannot touch. Let me tell you just one other real quick story of this. I don't think it's in my book. I'm not sure. So it was a time when I was studying yoga. I was studying with Mama Gina. People know her. And so I was all about inward energy, feminine energy, listening to my body. And my then husband was in a meeting, came in, right? He was in a meeting deciding whether to buy into a part of a company. And he had just been going through all the profit and loss statements and the research and the columns and the, you know, boxes and all the thing. Basically decided to buy it, comes into the other room from that meeting and says, "What do you think? What does your body say?" And I was like, "Oh, no one ever asked me that before." I tuned in. I was like, "Sorry, I get a no." And he was like, "Oh, okay, well, I'm going to kind of disregard that energy. Go for it." And it fell apart in the next couple of weeks, which was very good because it turned out it was a lot of the documents were falsified. And I thought, my body was tuned into some energy that all of our minds couldn't pick up. Now, I'm not saying that you only check in with your body before you make decisions, but wouldn't it be nice to have that voice on board?
Right. Can you talk more about the voice? Because this, when I'm coaching women with their careers, their business, their passionate, one of the number one things they're combating is first, they got that gremlin rumbling in their head, but they don't trust their choices.
Yeah.
I want to do this, but I don't know if it's the right thing. I really want to try it, but I'm so afraid to make the wrong decision.
Yeah.
So much so. How do we hear? What is the voice? And is it the same thing? I love how you did take time to break down all the voices we got within. Can you start there? Because I didn't think about this. You know, I'm like, well, is it my intuition? Is the same as my heart? Is the same as the, what's the deal?
Yes. Yes. Okay. If we have time, I want to tell you the story I've never told publicly.
Tell me in a minute.
Okay. First of all, let's talk about the voice. All right. So let me write this. I just got permission. It's a client story. So I just got permission. Okay.
Oh, awesome.
All right. So intuition has a beautiful definition. It is direct understanding, spiritual insight, or direct understanding without the need for conscious reasoning, No reason, no reason needed. Directly, you know it. And you know it in whatever way you know it. But usually there is a feeling, a confirmation in your body. Now, a lot of people will say it's a feeling or it's a voice or it's something, you know, it's a vision, my third eye or something. And if it's a feeling in your big toe, fantastic. I'm agnostic. Great. How you know. So I call it a voice because it is verbal and it is audible to me, but actually it's very felt. So it's really common that it'll take one or two set of our senses, right? It'll cross over. I think a great place to start is it is on my website. So we'll go through this later, but this is a free exercise. It's like a 5 or 6 minute video you could do this exercise. So I walk you through how to find the yes and no of your body, right? So this is it's in the book too, but the intuitive yes, the intuitive no, right? You have a very clear signature, some amount of feelings or sounds or signals or words or symbols or metaphors that are a feeling of a yes for you or a feeling of a no for you. And then everybody's got it. you might not have been paying attention for the past four decades. Doesn't matter. With a little bit of practice, a little bit of attention, it's right there. It's right there. It is wired into our bodies or wired into us. And from there, what I suggest is you start so small, so small, so small. Like, go to the grocery store. If you're, or do the groceries online, whatever you're doing at the moment, but you're like, you know, snap peas or broccoli. And you go, snap peas, body, what do you think? Yes, no. Broccoli, yes, no. Like, no one's going to die if you pick one or the other, right? Low stakes experimentation. So then you start to be like, well, it was a little more toward the snow peas. I'm going to go toward the snow peas. And so you can just do higher and higher stakes so that when someone says, you know, this business decision or this, so this is a story I'm going to tell you in a minute if we have the time. When the stakes are high, then you can trust your choices. But right now, here's the thing. If you're in a meeting and you got to pee, and that's just one example of the ways that we are taught to disregard our bodies.
Yeah.
Or a little girl who's supposed to hug her uncle and she just is like, no, he's got weird energy, but someone makes her hug her uncle. Or you're supposed to dress this way or close your legs or cross your knees or whatever it is. Like, we have slowly been groomed not to put attention inward and not to listen to our bodies and not to listen to our attention. So this is powerful to regain this back, you know, but if it's hard at first, that's why you've been groomed to not know what you know.
Yeah. Oh man. That's so true. That piece about the relative really got me, because there were a few relatives that I just hated kissing them. I did. And I was deemed rude if I didn't. And they were always the ones that would want to hold on and talk to you the longest. And I'm like, could you just let me go? You know? And there's your parents. Like, no, don't be rude. But and I never did that with my kids. And I got a lot of flack from some of my family members that were like, you're teaching them to be this. I'm like, they don't want to kiss you. They said hello. That's it. We're good. We're good. Tell me the story though. I'm so curious. I want to know what happened.
Okay. So this is a case study. This is like why we want to be going to the grocery store and checking out snap peas or broccoli, like doing our foundational homework for inner knowing. So I have a client and I have gotten to work with her through a breakup, the total despondency. She'd never find somebody, a new relationship, first baby, second baby. Amazing, right? So it's been a long road. And so here she is. This is a couple months ago during the pandemic, have her baby. And she is deciding that she would like to have a natural labor and that she has to pick one person to go to the hospital with. She's choosing a hospital birth, not a home birth, but we'll have midwives there. She's due. And then she's a couple days overdue. Midwives are like, don't worry about it. Babies come when they want to come. Doctors are like, no, you're 43 or whatever she is, right? So she's they're concerned about her age. They're like, get you in here and get induced. For her, and the induction of labor and the complications that can come from that was absolutely not her first choice. And so we have a session and she's like, what do I do? Like, what if there is a possibility for stillbirth? At this, at my age, waiting too long, should I induce, right? Like, blah, 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 what do I do, right? And we're like all up in those logical details, which count, right? High stakes. This is her life and this is a baby's life that we're dealing with. So I have the audacity to be like, okay, I'm going to put all the equivalent of the profit and loss statements over there for a minute. Let's tune in with the baby. Let's tune in with your body and let's see what's up. And when you tune into your body and your intuition, you get things that are a little left field. It takes some, they take some deciphering, some decoding. And so what she got, she was like, the baby, like, she keeps turning. And I get the sense that she's not clear how to come out. And And I was like, okay, all right. And she's a little like, she's feeling my stress and she's like turning. She doesn't know how to, like, we're not quite in sync here. She doesn't know how to come out. And so I said, all right, you know, I think, what do you want to do? And she's like, all right, I'm going to, the deadline is tomorrow. I have to make a choice. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go, I'm going to like commune with the baby. I'm going to do all like, just really calm my nervous system and be less stressed. I'll make a decision by tomorrow morning. Tomorrow morning, I'm like, what, like texting her, what's going on? And she's like, I am going to put it off one more day. And I said, okay. So we said, you know, look, we all know babies like to come right, start coming about 3 or 4 in the morning. So let's have you, you know, talk to her, let, you know, like show her the way out, show her which way to turn her body where, and like you tell her like 3 in the morning is a great time for you to come. So she texts me the next day and she was like, it was 3 in the morning. It was 3 in the morning. We barely made it to the hospital. She's having a second baby experience, you know, where it's like very short labor. We barely made it to the hospital. Natural vaginal birth the way she wanted, you know. And I was like, can I please tell this story? Because if you want to talk about high stakes choice, you know, do I listen to my body, which is like, no, slow down. Let me commune with the baby. I could kill my baby. I could have a problem in late, you know, for. And I, you know, it does matter. It does matter. The opinions of the doctors and the midwives and everybody, all that logical information matters. And the fact that she listened to her body and the baby inside her body and figured out, she listened to her intuitive voices first before the logic. And there was something at play. There was some kind of intuition, some kind of intelligence that was at play that she got to tap into. And I don't know that she would have been able to do that without being able to practice for a while before that with lower questions, right? I mean,
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That, I mean, and that scenario, especially, I definitely think we have been trained not to listen, that the doctors are the ones who know, in particular with our birthing experiences. And, you know, I've got a friend who was on the show last season and currently is going through her pregnancy. And it's interesting because she's married to a doctor who is of Western medicine, but it's like a Dharma and Greg. Remember that TV show?
Yes.
I tease her all the time about it. I'm like, you guys are so Dharma and Greg. But she's very much like Earth Mama all the way. And it's all about what I'm feeling. And it's beautiful. They complement each other well. Totally respects her point of view. She understands where he's coming from. But that is one of the things that, you know, she's been very vocal about, is just being able to trust what you want. And there were things I wanted that they talked me out of. Well, I would like a mirror because I want to see. And they were like, we don't have that. I'm like, it's a fucking mirror. Go get me a mirror. You can't find me a mirror. Like, I'm not asking for a whole lot. You know, things like that, just like frowned upon, or even the idea, you know, that I originally really wanted a midwife and again, got talked out of that. I would have loved a home birth. I know here it's technically illegal in Ohio and but again, talked out of that, you know what I mean? And it worked out fine because I had a preemie and it probably would not have been the best situation. But in the end, it was just so frustrating. But when I was in the hospital, I remember they had me in Trendelenburg, like head down, feet up. And I had gone in at 25 weeks because I was about 4 centimeters dilated. Like the baby was going to fall out. And it was like a sudden thing. I'd been rock climbing the rope the night before and that's all I could see I was doing. And he's like, I don't think it's that if you're an active person. They never to this day could figure out what it was, but I went into preterm. They wanted to keep me there for the entirety of the rest of the pregnancy upside down. But the whole time I was in there, they kept insisting on bringing me these books, as I'm sure they have to, about preemies and what to prepare yourself for. And it was just these nightmarish books, babies with giant cans in their heads and these little bodies in their front. And I looked at the nurse and I'm like, I'm not reading that.
Yeah.
And she's like, but you should be informed. I'm like, you know what? We don't know anything yet. Right now, everything is moving along fine and the baby feels fine to me. when it happens and I have an understanding of what I'm dealing with, then I will open those books. But this is to me kind of like, you know, the flight attendants telling me what I'm going to do when the plane crashes. Ain't nobody going to remember. You want me to remember? Tell me some shit 5 minutes before I need to know what to do. Nobody's going to remember and nobody's paying attention. So anything I'm reading now was either going to stoke my fear that was already that I was trying my best to keep at bay. It was going to, you know, possibly cause me more stress. I did not feel like it was going to do what they want. So I rejected them. And, you know, as it was, I was right. And the baby was fine. And they actually thought I was wrong about my due date and that I didn't know when I conceived because the baby came out looking too healthy to them. That's my favorite. I'm like, you don't know when I'm fucking? B, I know when I'm fucking. Okay. I know what's going on.
Well,
you know, the moment of conception.
You asked this before. I didn't quite answer it fully. So you're reminding me, which is, so not only how do I trust my choices, but how do I know, right? So you're, you have an intuitive sense. You have an inner knowing. It's going to be okay, right? How do you know that is the voice of your inner knowing versus the voice of fear or the voice, right? So that's the question I think that most of us come in with. Now, this is super personal, but I do want to give a marker here. So this is not that the voice of fear or the voice of worry, like those voices are not bad. They have really interesting things to say. They should be regarded at certain points. But we think that they're really, you know, if you get an intuitive no, is that a fear no or is that an intuitive no? And we don't know how to distinguish them. And once you start looking, they're very different. It's different for everybody, but here's some markers because I think this is important. So an intuitive knowing, yes, go to the hospital, get induced. No, stay home. I'm going to have natural labor, whatever it is. A couple different ways to describe it. Usually is matter of fact. It might be regarding an emotionally charged subject, but it's a little matter of fact. Whereas a fear voice, it has a lot of charge to it. It's going to feel frenetic. Sometimes you will, if you're a feeler, a sensor, you're going to feel an intuitive inner knowing voice, usually in your body, in your belly, in your chest, and you're going to feel fear sometimes in your chest, but like in your head, it's like going to be in a higher place in your body. You can probably even feel when you're talking and you're just feeling matter of fact. And then you get a little bit, and your voice gets a little bit high and you're like up in fear, right? So that's one way it can go. I think sometimes when we're really in touch with our intuitive voice, we just like ourselves. We just, it's like, there's a regard. There is a, there's a seatedness and a regard for ourselves. And when we get into fear, we get into worry or someone else's perception of us or opinion, then that's when we get self-doubty. That's when we get, and we start to feel bad about ourselves or we should, or et cetera. So I love that marker. It's like, do I like me when I hear
that's
this
so
voice?
Good.
Yeah.
That's so good. I love that so much. Cause I do. I know when I'm, you know, the distinction between the two, I recently, that's killing me. I'm like looking at the time, like, no, I need her. Can I keep you a little bit longer? Do you have like 10 more? I do have a 5:30 after this, but I'm trying to like, I got to get to the dark night of the soul. I got to because.
Okay. Zip. We're going there right after this.
Right now. Like this. It will tumble right into it. It's one of those things where I felt that I was experiencing some kind of crazy crisis, like about a year throughout last year, you know, 2019 to 2020. I just was so up and down, you know, with my emotions, up and down with, you know, and my husband knows we've talked about this where we were in therapy, you know, up and down with, you know, feeling terrible that I wasn't a great mom, you know, even dark thoughts on the fringe there, you know, never thinking that I would actually do something, but I was bothered by the thought that I even was considering or wondering or what would it be like, or if I just left this place, would the children be better off? Could he find them a more suitable person to raise them? The crazy shit that you say to yourself, okay?
Yeah.
And you know, and this is the first time I'm actually saying this out loud as well. And it was really, it just sobbing uncontrollably for days at a time sometimes. Then feeling guilty because I'm supposed to be a coach. So therefore I should have this all together and figured out already. Oh my God, the number I did on myself, like shame spiral. So I was searching everywhere outside of myself for confirmation, for help, for direction. Okay. So much so that I went in the direction of wanting to think I found a teacher for me. Okay. And was so excited because I'm like, this is the person or the thing that's going to pull me out of this place. And I really hadn't heard of the Dark Night of the Soul till I read your book. Man, let me tell you something. Your book was like saving my ass on so many levels because I was like, oh my God, okay. But you explained it so beautifully. And what it helped me understand was that I was not broken, that I, like everything, I literally had talked myself into believing that everything that I had learned from my coaching just was no longer working. Therefore, what else was there to do with me? Like, if this isn't going to work, then what's going to work? You know, do I need mental health? Do I need medication? Like all these things. And you normalize the dark night of the soul so beautifully, but even more so after I read your book, I took one of your seminars, right? And you did the seminar, I can't remember what it was, I think it was about the dark night of the soul, it was something in that title, but it was very recent, but you talk about the hero's journey. And this was the first time that I was like, oh my God, everybody needs to hear this because we are so hard on ourselves, or we think that this is the end of the journey or that we somehow are not gonna be able to come back up. So I'm gonna stop my end of my share because I want you to take the time to, first of all, explain what the hell, can you summarize a dark night of the soul?
Yeah.
And I know it'll look different for different people, but what are the main things that kind of signify that's possibly what's going on with somebody?
So sometimes we just hear those words phrased together and go, mm-hmm. Oh, I don't even know what that means, but I think that's what's going on with me. There are some mm-hmm. words for it. What it is a rite of passage. It is a transformation. Now, here's the thing. The beautiful metaphor is the caterpillar to the butterfly. Now, I know this is kind of cliched. We can imagine a little like butterfly tattoo on a 12-year-old's ankle, you know, and get kind mm-hmm. of like cute with this. But here's the thing that happens. So one of the age-old symbols of transformation, changing from one thing to another, there's this little hairy caterpillar that crawls around and is going to end in a little bit as this being that is with beautiful wings who can fly. Mm-hmm. And the process that caterpillar goes through, like creates a chrysalis, goes in there and entirely liquefies, mm-hmm. turns to goo, unrecognizable. And then somehow there is a reassembly, chews its way out of its chrysalis and like actually has to struggle out of that thing. So all the goo, the right goo gets on his wings. So he's now he or she can fly. Mm-hmm. So we know that, we've heard that maybe, but that's what goes on. There's some process that it's like time for you to become a butterfly or the next version of butterfly. Mm-hmm. But first, here's your chrysalis. And mm-hmm. and here, you know, you will be goo. You will be liquefied. We don't know how long. So it will absolutely be hard. And, you know, good luck to you. Mm-hmm. So that is what this is. This is a deeply transformative process that is so much about, I think, our soul. It is the essence of kind of part of what we're here to do and learn yeah. and be or become now. We don't do it just once. Maybe we might do it several times in our lives. I think there are a few people who don't, but I think most people do. I think we have no words for it except for sometimes depression. Mm-hmm. And they're not the same, but they can be. And I think that if we could put context around this, that this is a holy transformation. Mm-hmm. This is not you losing your marbles. What happens is we think, well, it's not working. Everything's this is really, really bad. I must be bad. Mm-hmm. Things are not working. I'm being punished. I didn't do it right. And mm-hmm. I just like to say, this is definitely not a punishment. This is an invitation. Mm-hmm. And this is a hard arena. I would not have known really about this except for that I happened to read it in a book and go mm-hmm. through one myself and get really, really mm-hmm. curious. I don't know how I'm going to pull it off, but it is the subject of my second book. It's like a third of the way written. It's hard to write books during a pandemic as a single mom, but, but
imagine.
Okay. Yeah. So here's the thing, right? So should I talk about the hero's journey?
Yeah. Because I want to make sure I'm understanding it because the way I interpret it to mean was that you may go through something like this, maybe not to the same degree every time, but it's not just that you're done every time, because I think that we're taught again from a very outer energy that growth is all about levels and it's going up and it's going up. So we just assume that we're just supposed to keep ascending until we reach, I don't know, some golden child moment. Or hero's journey sounded a lot like, yeah, you are going to be on this hot, beautiful, you know, great journey. And then shit's going to happen and you're going to have to relearn a new lesson. And you may go under, as you call the underworld. And in that underworld, that's okay, because part of that is you then coming back up again. But this is normal.
It's normal. So let's just say, Jesus, Luke Skywalker, right? These are heroes who go on a hero's journey, have to go through an underworld with trials and tribulations and obstacles to overcome. And they learn something, they come back and the movie ends.
Yeah.
Right. Or the story ends, like resurrection. What happens when it happens next year?
Yeah.
Right. Like, we don't have the sequel movie. We don't understand that. Yes, it completes, or sometimes it doesn't fully complete in a apotheosis and fireworks, mm-hmm. But things are different, but that it may begin again. And so this is why I say this is not the hero's journey, it's the heroine's journey. And in fact, one of the ways that I talk about it is that it's not adventure, right? One of the things mm-hmm. about the hero's journey is that there is a call to adventure. You either want to go on the adventure or you get called unwittingly. Mm-hmm. And so this is an inventure. This is absolutely an inward process, inward looking. Mm-hmm. I mean, you might be getting on a plane and going somewhere during your Dark Night of the Soul, but usually it is a deep, deep inward inquiry. And here's the thing, is that the tools of the hero, the try harder, the work harder, the like, but by my coaching skills, my pleasure skills, mm-hmm. whatever it is, like do more of them, stop working. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they make things worse. And in fact, they might be part of the reason we find ourselves in the underworld or in the dark night of the soul. And so we have mm-hmm. to look around and go, what are the heroine's tools? Mm-hmm. And most of the time, they are all those inward energy tools.
Yeah.
And we find these places that we have been cruel to ourselves and abandoned ourselves and haven't listened and have overridden our bodies and not listened to our intuitive voices and put pleasure off for later, you know, or, and I'm not saying that we are always at fault, right? Mm-hmm. But it can be a way of like, wow, I have really, I've really not been a very good friend to myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That part. Thank you for breaking that down. You may still have to come back another time.
Yeah.
I'm like, we're not done.
No, I want a sequel.
We need a sequel. Okay. Here's the thing. I know you've got a lot of amazing projects going on. What do you have right now that you are running course-wise? What do you got going on where people can start working with you?
So I'm going to just simplify this. Okay. So
yeah,
just since we talked last, like 8 things burned down in my life. So very simple. Like, okay. Find me at my website. Yeah.
You sound like me. I swear to God. Like, that's not going to happen. Okay. Moving on.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah.
But at this moment, I work with people in two ways that are just beautiful. One is an online community, right? And so I think of it like a mistress mind. It's called the deep end because we like to go deep. And it's like a mistress mind, everything about a mastermind, right? It's a small-ish group. It's just low cost for a lot of high touch. There's we just get to be in class together. We have a community where we talk together and I do Q&As, all that kind of good stuff. Easy, low cost. Yeah. And then I do one-on-one coaching and belief repatterning. And those are the main ways that I work with people at the moment. When you're in the online community, you have access to all my online courses. Some of the things you mentioned, Dark Night of the Soul, et cetera. You just like, it's all you, the whole library is there.
Wow. Okay. So these are courses that like they're pre-recorded. They can take them.
They're pre-recorded. And here's the thing, like we can also hook you up. So you get little time reminders. So you would do it at your own time, but I appreciate reminders, you know, to stay on track and kind of like, remember that I'm actually doing a course. So yes, they are pre-recorded, but we also have every week classes and Q&As. Those are live. So you
love it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay. And then a book coming.
Okay.
Sometime in the future.
Yeah. Could we just call in the future? Yeah. Okay. So I got, you got to write a book proposal before you write a book, even if you're a second time author and it's mostly written. And I just take hours at a time to do that. And I don't know where I misplaced my hours at a time, but I just can't seem to find them. So.
Yeah. But like you said, kids at home. I understand this. I literally had to send one out of the house today. I'm like, you must go because you are not to be trusted to be quiet. The other one, I'm like, no death growling for the next hour. You know, it's like no metal, no heavy metal on the back. So this is the question I ended with all the time. And Last Supper, most important dinner. I don't care what you want to call it. Massively important dinner to you. Okay. You can invite any three people you want to this dinner. They can be from history, fiction, real entities, anybody you want. Who do you invite?
I love this question. I had to think about it a little bit. So here's my two: Mary Magdalene and Beyonce. And I know that's a good dream team, right?
I want to come.
I assumed we would both be there.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Was there a third?
Do I get a third?
Give me one more.
I was thinking of Anais Nin.
Wow.
Do you know who Anais Nin is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do.
Yeah.
Tell me why Mary Magdalene?
In my research, so I did not grow up in any organized religion. So I have a little bit of a maybe less baggage, more curiosity. To me, she is, she just epitomizes the way that the women and girls have been disregarded in history.
Yes.
I believe, it's my belief, if I look at things, that she was the partner of Jesus, you know, assuming that that these were actual people and not just a mythical story, and that she had deep influence on really like his teachings. And I think it was right. So I've read the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, it's a little hard to understand, but I believe that she was so tuned into a mystic and Gnostic realization of the way that spirit manifests through the body. So she just had this incredible, like, no, we must live through the body and all of its being is not sinful. It is the kingdom of heaven is within. It's within this body.
Right.
So her stance around body, sexuality, and, you know, and that she was a woman figure in a time when women were deeply feared and oppressed, you know, a real soft spot for her.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. I've heard the same. I've wanted to do more research on that, read more about that. Definitely mislabeled, misunderstood. And I do, I think it's fascinating. I think, you know, Beyonce is a given. We get that. Like, who does not want that woman at their dinner table? But yeah.
No, but here's one thing I want to say about her is, so one of my careers past was a dancer. And so I love the fact, I love all the things I love so much about what she does. And just to pull out this one piece is the way that she brings art and performance art into a pop medium. Yes. I deeply appreciate that as an artist, as a performer, and essentially is guiding the palette of pop culture toward a more artistic, you know, like really gritty, wonderful sense of what we're all grappling with. So, so that's one thing I really appreciate about her.
I dig that. I do. Yeah. I love that. Well, my lady, I loved having you on here. I know you and I are going to work together again at some point. You know, I'm brainstorming all the time. Like, when we can retreat again, when we're able to leave and not wear masks on a beach, you know, I envision like what a great retreat. And then, you know, I'd have you there as a speaker and we'd have like different styles of movement and oh my God, I mean, it would be absolutely delicious. So I'm planting that seed right now, putting it in public.
Yes, I've been thinking too, since you mentioned that. Yeah. I'm a yes, and let's water the seed.
Beautiful.
I love this idea, and I just so appreciate getting to connect with you and create with you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Much love.
Much love.
Thank you for listening to the Electric Feminine Podcast with me, your host, Anjua Maximo. If you're ready to dive into this work of developing your connection to your goddess energy, of removing those obstacles standing in your way, please reach out at info@anjuamaximo.com, or you can check out my courses available and my private coaching at www.anjuamaximo.com. Be good to you, be good to each other.